keine Limits mehr. Nie wieder aufgebrauchtes Datenvolumen mit dem echten Unlimited-Tarif. Nur mit Magenta Mobil. Nur im besten Telekom-Netz. Auch für Geschäftskunden. Jetzt unter telekom.de.
What's up, fool? What's up, fool podcast? Right here with Felipe Esparza, Rodrigo Torres.
Yeah, man.
Sometimes Lisa Esparza over here.
Yeah.
What's up, fool? Man. We just got back.
What's up?
From, we didn't go anywhere this year, huh?
Nah, this week. But you went to Arkansas, right?
That's right. I did go to Arkansas. Dude, podcast fans showed up.
Hell yeah, dude.
This girl who listens to the podcast. There's some guy from East Los Angeles who drove 45 minutes to get to the show.
How was it, dude?
Dude, it was Tinseltown, bro. It was like that town from Superman the show.
Yeah?
Just flat, bro. I was inside like college town.
In the community?
Yeah, like my hotel was run like once I stepped out of my hotel room, and if I walk maybe like 10 feet, I'm inside of the beginning of the entrance of the school. Not the beginning of the school, but like the grass. There's a pathway to get to the school.
The quad or whatever?
The
mezzanine.
Yeah, because the main entrance is on the other side of the hotel room. But damn, bro, like ROTC building was not too, like on the side of my building.
Uh-huh.
Hotel room must have been part of the college many years ago, but now it's just the hotel.
Oh, cool. Because I seen you got a big old welcome too, huh? A big old banner for you?
Yeah, I almost ran through it and ripped it in. They were cool, man. I got booked by a girl named Sydney,
uh-huh.
African-American student from the school. She's from Arkansas, Little Rock. Sweet. She's a big fro, and everybody there is millennial, bro. But people talk shit about Melina, but some of them know what's up.
Oh, dude, not all of them are how, they're portrayed.
None of them were offended with the shit I said, bro. There were no ahs.
Dude, they love comedy.
Nobody left crying. I did an hour and a half.
Dude, that's
no
sweet.
One. I, there was no opener, no feature, so. And,
ladies and gentlemen, Felipe Esparza.
If I would have brought all that merch, bro, they would try to sneak out and avoid you, dog. Because I said,
no eye contact.
Dude, as soon as the show ended, those fools ran out of there, bro.
Yeah, dude.
Like, I had a class to go to or something.
Oh, cool.
But it was gone. Only like half of the people stood for photos and everybody left.
Yeah, dude. College is always cool things like that, dude.
Nobody wanted to buy nothing.
I never had a treat like that, though, like a badass comedian.
And the rest of the town got to come, too.
Yeah, man.
Really? Anybody. It was free to anybody?
It was free to the town.
Yeah.
Dude, that's so super
this,
cool.
So this blended couple, this Trailer Trash Mexican couple, NASCAR.
More like a hurricane.
Were they Nachos and Crackers?
Nachos and NASCAR.
Nachos and NASCAR couple? they drove 3 hours.
Oh, really? To come out to the show?
And then I saw a man with a real, real long beard who showed up to the show. Like a hillbilly dude with his son.
Like not a clean one, like ZZ Top?
No, man. This one had a bird inside. No, but they were all cool, bro. They're like, they loved the whole show.
Dude, because they just love comedy, dude, and that's what's up, man.
And shout out to Ralphie May's nephew showed up.
That's what I'm talking about, Big Daddy.
He's a little ass kid, bro. He's going to journalism school.
Oh, awesome, because he's originally from Arkansas, right?
Yeah,
he hosts the college news channel,
college
right?
News,
oh, really?
Something like that. He wears a suit and all that stuff.
That's cool, man. Old school.
What's up, fool, man? Can I get a water?
What's up?
Somebody, yeah, oh, yeah, please? I'm sorry, yeah.
We don't. You don't have to get it, man.
No, just, I'll get it.
Right.
I didn't notice
them. I'll take a shot.
I'll get one. Oh, this one.
We got everything here.
An Old West booze.
Shout out to who?
San Diego.
San Diego and Guatemala.
Shout out.
What they do?
I have no idea. And I don't know. What did you just say right now before that?
Oh, they're Arkansas.
Okay.
Bro, and then it was like small town, bro. It was right next to another town called Bentonville or I did where Walmart started.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Sam Walmart, huh?
So right on the side of the school, I woke up in the morning, I had half a Louis. So that saved the morning, dude.
Oh, dude, lucky.
And I had to leave at noon, so my flight was at 1:58. So I had nothing to do, dude. So I took care of that Louis, and then I started walking around the school, you know, outside the school, not inside the school.
Off campus.
There was at least four sorority fraternity houses being rebuilt.
Oh,
huge, bro.
Oh, like the little, like, what, Victorian houses type.
Huge.
Manners.
Dude, it was huge. Their house was better than the place I stood in.
Oh, really?
Huge, bro. And then when we're driving to the show, like, I wanted to see, like, if there are any Latino construction workers, right? So I went, bro, they're all Mexican.
They came out?
For the wear yellow hats, playing with those safety hats. They all say what's up to me. La pura vida! And then they all say what's up. Yeah, bro.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
I guess they stole those jobs, bro.
Yeah, they didn't steal anything. They're just working, dude.
They're just working, right?
Yeah, dude.
They probably, you know, they found out these guys do a good job.
Is that the first time you see Mexicans in Arkansas like that?
No, I've seen them everywhere, bro.
Okay.
But I've never been to Arkansas.
Yeah, I've never been to Arkansas either. That's cool, man.
But there were a lot of them. And there were a lot of them there at the show, too.
Hell yeah, dude.
And when I tried to change the subject, but New Brunswick, I Wikipedia'd it. And then Asian and Latino are the fastest growing minority in that town.
Out there right now? Hell yeah, dude. I've only been to Jersey once. Well, that one time we took Coco's from North Bergen.
North Bergen.
The little ferry across to NYC.
But it's farther than the ferry, man.
He dropped you at Jersey City, though, right?
Yeah.
And then you went over.
But New Brunswick is farther than that shit.
Oh, yeah?
It's about an hour from the city, I think.
Well, that's how far West Knight was.
It's not that far, but it's not as complicated to get over there
as
it is to West Knight.
We have to. We gotta fly to New Jersey, right? We don't gotta fly to New York, right?
You're flying to Newark.
Newark.
Newark's a good airport to fly into. It used to be my favorite because when I lived down by the World Trade Center, you could catch a bus from the World Trade Center to Newark Airport, and it was 30 minutes, and it was like $20.
Less chaotic,
and it was just a straight shot. Otherwise, you had to take the train and a bus, and like it was annoying, but it's a good airport.
Where's the town where the Sopranos are from? Is that made up, or?
I don't know where
that is. Because they have Satriales and all that? Is that still around or no?
Jersey City.
Or is that all messed up?
I don't know where they're from.
I was just thinking about that.
Every time I went to New Jersey, bro, I saw those Cubans, bro.
Coco's cousins. I've been to Wallington, New Jersey one time with Voodoo, and that was like, it was a Polish town.
Yeah?
Yeah, dude. All they had was like a bowling alley.
And one sandwich.
They had a deli, and they had all those, you know, like all, I don't know.
Did they have the Polish burrito?
Nah, dude.
Remember that?
Yeah, they had cow tongue and all that. It was weird, dude.
Oh, my God.
Were that Bagel tongue. Boys or what?
Yeah, man. They were calling, when I was in Chicago, they had,
shout out to Paige.
They had these ground beef with like almost like albóndiga, you know, albóndigas, but they're wrapped and they wrap them with cabbage.
Ew.
And they bake them. That's a Polish thing.
Yeah, that's cabbage rolls. Yeah,
cabbage rolls. But we went to this other place in New Jersey, and there was this girl named Paige.
And she was running the place,
and
man.
Right there, man, she goes, what are those? Polish burritos, guys.
They were cool, man. Bagel boys right there in West
Side. The funny about that chick, she, like, you could tell, like, why they hired her, because of personality, because she spoke English in, like, in a New Jersey, New York accent. And then she switched it over to talk shit to those Mexicans.
Yeah, dude. She was running the place. She's like a big girl, man. But, yeah, very authoritative.
I think, by the way, Sopranos is technically Newark, although I don't think they really specify. But it says that there's a film that was detailing the Sopranos' background written by David Chase, and it's called The Many Saints of Newark, and it was set during the 60s during the Newark riots.
When did that movie come out?
I don't know. They just purchased the story from David Chase.
Oh.
They purchased that last month.
Like a prequel to The Sopranos,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So somebody's going to... So.
Who knows?
Sopranos going to be...
Richie Aprile might be back, huh?
Those, all those
Richie and Jackie Aprile.
They're going to be young?
Yeah, probably. They're probably why not have a prequel?
Like, I would want to see
Junior B.
I would want to see Tony Soprano's father, like how the shit he read. Because the dude that played him looked good.
Because, yeah, when he would have those flashbacks when he's going to therapy. Yeah. And remember, he hid in the ride.
You know who his father was, right? His father, I think, is the same actor that came in to that bar in Casino and shut up the place, bro. And then they fucking put a vice over his head, and an eye popped out.
Oh, no, dude. Yeah, yeah, the hair and everything.
That's Tony Soprano's father. Yeah, yeah. He was tough, that dude, huh?
Hell yeah, dude.
Came in blasting, shot a woman, shot everybody in a bar. Then they tortured him. Then the eye popped out.
Took it like a soldier, dog.
For a new movie coming now.
Which one?
Another movie about Pablo Escobar.
Another one.
Another one, bro.
There's another one. What's this about?
It's called My Love for Pablo. It's about the reporter, that woman that helped him.
That his assassin ended up killing, right?
No, I don't know. They killed her, but she helped later on catch him.
Yeah, yeah.
She played the hot one that was like, she was getting him off when he was doing like the Robin Hood stuff, like buying electricity, buying schools for everybody. She was doing like the good ones, you know. But later on, when he was doing bad, she was trying to get his side too, but it didn't work out. That girl.
Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
So guess who's starting?
Who?
Guess who's playing the girl?
Salma Hayek.
Penelope Cruz.
Oh, really?
Guess who's playing the dude, Pablo Escobar.
Open your eyes.
Javier Bardem.
Oh, really? Man. Yeah. Husband and wife.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Javier Bardem. And, dude, but, I mean, after watching Narcos, Pablo Escobar.
That's enough, no?
Like they showed us, they pretty much told us how it started. Then I went to go watch the Spanish one, which I don't know if you guys know, but it's better. If you guys want to watch like a more detailed Pablo Escobar series, go watch Pablo Escobar.
El Patrón del Mal.
Yeah, you're right.
I like that. I even like that one. I think that's the best Pablo.
He's a good Pablo.
He's a good Pablo.
He's very emotional. Yeah. Like when they killed his main guy.
Yeah. I care for him.
Like when they killed his boy, his main guy, El Güero, or whatever, the mean assassin, bro, he cries, bro. Like, you feel it, like, okay, he must take his side.
Well, he was one of those strong-ass dudes, though.
But when you watch the documentaries, you watch that Pablo Escobar always hugged and kissed his sicarios and always gave him money, bro, and they would give him guns. He treated him like they were kids. But that's how you treat kids, bro, if you wanted to do your shit for you, right?
Of course, dog. Fucking,
so I'm mind game, doc.
Take care of your employees and take care of you, man.
Fucking mind game, doc.
On another level, dude. So what do you think about that? You think it's going to be a badass movie? It's already been done, dude.
It's already been done, but I will watch it when it comes out on Netflix.
I have to see it because Javier Bardem.
I have to see it because he has to
do something good.
I got to see how bad she is.
Maybe she could do the Colombian accent.
Oh my God, man. I already saw the trailer, man.
Oh, you did?
Oh, you did?
What is going on here?
Oh, my God, dude.
Open your eyes.
But you know, Javier Bardem is going to kill it.
Oh, man, that was a man, dog.
Yeah, he's the man.
He already had the long hair.
I liked him in the James Bond, when he was the James Bond villain. Like, not the, was it the last one? The one before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was cool.
That's a good one.
I liked him in No Country for Old Men.
Shit, I liked him in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Me too, bro.
Me too. Hell yeah.
Bro.
I watched that shit twice.
What a prequel about that motherfucker.
That's what I'm saying, dude. That was a badass character.
Let's take it back to when him and the Spanish Armada are fucking up pirates.
Yeah, dude. That was badass.
Dude. As soon as I saw that scene, I went to go look it up, bro, to look up how bad the Spanish were. There was a bad motherfucker, bro.
Dude,
they were going to own all of North America, bro, and Canada, so they fucking lost to the British. They lost the
1533.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were the
king. They were rich off Mexico, of course.
Dude, all that gold
going through fucking Tulum.
That and silver, dude. Forget about it, dude.
Man, so many gold came through Mexico, huh?
Oh, dude, forget
people talk about
it.
Gold they stole in America, man. They stole a lot of gold in Mexico.
Dude, they say when the Spanish got
they steal it, but they found it. People didn't want it.
When the Spanish got to the Aztecs, little kids would play with gold, like make shit out of it, like Play-Doh, dude. Like OG, like soft, real gold, pure gold.
That's why I read somewhere also to like look like I think it, I don't know if maybe it was a movie we saw a documentary that. Like, one of the Spaniards rubbed one of the Aztec skins, and they had, like, crystals of gold on it.
Yeah, little...
But they didn't even know, bro.
Flakes.
Flakes. They just landed on them.
Yeah, man.
And then in the Machu Picchu, when those Spaniards showed up way up in the mountain, they gave those fools fucking that the Peruvian drink. Micho, what's it called?
Yeah, I don't know. It's made out of the coca leaf that yeah. burns you up. I have no idea.
And they said they serve the food in glass of gold.
Really? And then, they were all opening their eyes.
That's like me showing up somewhere to a new town, bro, and these motherfuckers are passing out Louis.
Like it's nothing.
I know, brother. You show up, bro, and then you go up there, and they got a bunch of E-Zone Bud, and you're like, how much is this? Oh, we're just giving it away. And he goes, man, I'm about to come up in this town.
That's how it is, dog.
It's like when Joey said, when we're talking to Joe Diaz, and on his podcast, he said that he showed up. Oh, he's here.
Oh, is he here? Okay.
And he showed up. He showed up to Boulder, bro. And you just know how to take advantage of nice people.
It was wide open, dog.
Wide open. So just took all that
gold. What's happening, brother?
What's happening?
How you doing?
What's up?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the old book.
Yeah.
I need the one with the dudes.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to bring that one. My doctor had me caught up over there at the doctor's office.
It's all good, brother.
What's up, fool? So then we went to the Eric Andre's birthday party.
Yeah, dude, that was crazy.
That was crazy, bro. That fool, he dressed up like a woman, had it on quinceañera, bro.
So that fool got body slammed, eh?
Then the wrestler showed up and body slammed him in a quinceañera dress.
Were you guys there for the pudding wrestling?
Yeah.
I didn't see that, dude.
You missed it.
Ah, dude.
They had a mud wrestling, bro, but it was all pudding and chocolate. But it was really all, they emptied out all the... All the restrooms in Echo Park, and they put them in the pool. Yeah, so that happened, and then I was supposed to host the place, but you know it was chaos.
Oh, dude, it was crazy.
But you brought him in, right?
I brought
you
him in.
Introduced him. I did as my got job.
Come on in, eh?
And then you went on stage through that one back entrance. So we went around the other side, but we didn't catch you.
Yeah,
but
we
heard you.
Yeah,
man. I knew this party was going to be crazy, but I was expecting everything that I saw.
Yeah.
Even those three people were walking around naked.
Oh, dude, yeah, and the lady.
It wasn't a surprise at all. No, it wasn't
I know,
a
big ass lady, dude.
You don't understand, man. Esteban, we were at this party, man. It was a mosh pit, and it was an old black dude, you know, with a third arm running around. A baby elbow.
Nobody wanted gross, a mosh
pit. Nobody wanted a mosh pit, huh?
Marcella danced with that fool, right?
She kept him with that fool.
She gave me the creeps, dog.
Man, I showed up with my top hat, bro. Nobody even noticed because there was a naked man around.
Yeah, man.
But that was kind of gross too, though. Because like I always thought that if you go to a nudist colony, those would be the type of people you'll see naked.
That's yeah, yeah. There's not gonna be no good looking people, no. Dude.
Like there'd be nobody there from Bang Bros. Nobody there from Barrio Girls. Just a bunch of fans. Just a bunch of fans, bro, of the fucking the other Lowrider magazine in up north. Our friend. Not Lowrider, but another
Streetwise.
One. Streetwise. Yeah, man. Streetwise, Lowrider. There used to be an old school one, bro, called Kyovo. What? Back in the day. It was Q and then B-O. You remember that one?
Nah, dude. Literally.
Little.
Oh man, I told you about when I used to go back to the hood, bro. Like when I come out of rehab or come out of school, and I see an old ass veterano, bro, just came out of prison too. But I always say old, but back then it was old when you're fucking 17, 30.
I know, huh?
He's you're a grown man, bro. But then you turned 30, eh?
Oh, that's young, eh?
That's young, eh? Shit, I can't believe I was cutting people my age old.
Dude.
But I remember when I was 17, even when I was in junior high school, I would see high school students, I'd be like, yeah, they're old.
Dude, I remember when I was a little kid, those folks had full-on mustaches and chest hair and shit.
I remember to be this hot-ass chick, right?
Like a woman, huh?
Hot, bro, like a woman, bro, in junior high and in high school. Then my brother was lying, bro, my brother Angel. Nah, bro, she only dates LA Ram players. My brother's a fucking liar, bro.
Like he knew, huh?
Street low, not streetwise.
Streetwise of clothing, my bad.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Somebody correct. Alex corrected me.
What's up, fool? This weekend, I'm going to be in New Brunswick, New Jersey at the Stress Factory with Rodrigo and Johnny in his new shoes, April 12th through the 14th. April 20th, that's right, 420, Albuquerque, New Mexico, at Isleta Resort with Rodrigo Torres, Johnny, and Toby.
That's almost sold out.
That's almost sold out, people. Cinco de Mayo, Thunder Valley Casino in Sacramento area, Lincoln, with Rodrigo Torres, Johnny, and Marcella. May 10th through the 12th, Salt Lake City at Wise Guys, their brand new Jordan Landing location. Jordan Landing location.
It's like 20 minutes from Salt Lake. I don't
know. Rodrigo, Johnny, Toby. May 19th, I'm coming back. It's been a while. But this time I'm doing a bigger set. Ignacio, Colorado, at Sky Ute Casino with Rodrigo and Larry Bubbles. Murr! That fool wrote a bunch of jokes for me, bro.
Hell yeah, dude.
They were all murrs. not one funny one, bro.
So, can I plug a date real quick?
He's going to kill himself.
I'm just kidding, man. They're all good.
Oh, no. I'm going to get the bell.
Oh, man. Somebody just fucking tagged me on YouTube. What happened?
I got a lot of free time, so I wrote you some jokes.
And we have new dates that we added to the Bad Decision Tour. All right? Tickets will go on sale to the public April 20th. But for you guys, our listeners, it'll be April 17th.
Next Tuesday.
Through the 19th. Password for the fan pre-sale is F-O-O-L. Find the tickets at FelipeWorld.com/tour. Starting April 17th, on sale to the public, 420. El Paso, Texas, June 22nd. San Antonio, June 23rd. Amarillo, Texas, August 10th. McAllen, Texas, August 11th. Lubbock, Texas, August 24th. Laredo, Texas, August 25th. Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm coming back September 14th, baby. Where at?
Nevada? Oh, that's going to be Hard Rock.
Hard Rock Cafe.
Wow. That's Mexican Independence Weekend. So
we're doing it.
We chose to go on the Friday instead of the Saturday because there's always a fight on Saturday. So we're going to do Friday.
See, we'll do it. Yeah. Dallas, Texas, October 12th. Houston, Texas, October 13th. San Francisco, November 2nd. That's right. San Francisco, the Wilbur Theater.
Warfield.
Warfield, right. The Warfield Theater. Take that, Punchline. We didn't need your ass.
Legendary.
Never booked me. November 3rd, San Diego. Take that, this other comedy club in San Diego. You know who you are, you asshole.
Fuck you, man.
All right, we're not bitter.
Can I plug a little date?
That is a fucking weekend, isn't it?
Yes.
That's a really fucking weekend.
April 19th at the Ontario Improv with Edwin San Juan. I'll be there.
Edwin San Juan, April 19th, people. The pre-20th. I might show up to that.
What club is it?
Yeah. Ontario Improv.
Ontario Improv.
Yeah, the 19th.
All right, man. Hey, bro, you want to look good in your underwear?
I do.
And be comfortable?
Tired of my underwear folding over.
Don't sacrifice style, bro. Check out my new me undies. I'm wearing them right now. Okay.
Put them over the pants. Hey.
These guys are ball huggers, bro. You know when you get the Fruit of the Looms, bro, and then you wear them for too long, and they start sweating, and they start going up your leg, and they start cutting your ass. Or when you wear boxer briefs, they start rising and shit. Then you take them off, it's like you're wearing trousers again. Okay. I've been wearing me undies for a long time, bro. First of all, because they gave them to me. And
very long time.
But I would buy them if they were at the store.
We did buy a couple pairs, too. We added a couple.
And it's like wearing comfortable biker shorts.
They're boxer briefs,
bro. But you remember when you used to watch Sinbad, how tight those were? and you were asking yourself, man, Sinbad needs a little more room in the front. Well, these ones come with a lot of room, bro.
They used to dress like a genie, huh?
Yeah, man. We used to wear the biker, whatever it was.
What's up, y'all?
Yeah, bike shorts.
100% satisfaction guarantee. Me Undies guarantees you'll love their undies or your money back. I don't know if you're going to send these underwears back, babe, but they'll send your money back. Me Undies adventurous prints and designs are limited edition. New patterns are released every week. So far, I only got one pattern, but...
I just picked colors for you.
Okay.
You don't like patterns.
I like ones that are all brown. No one can notice. Me Undies has an exclusive offer for my listeners for any first-time purchasers. When you purchase Me Undies, you get 20% off and free shipping. Me Undies is so sure you love the underwear. They offer 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com. Foo. MeUndies.com/foo. That's MeUndies. UNDIES. Like me undies, MeUndies.com/foo.
Those are me undies. Mate.
Mate. What's up, fool? We got Rodrigo Torres right here in the house.
Don't worry about me, man. We got a living legend right here.
What's up, fool? Chill. We got a guest right here, bro.
Oh, man.
A guy that I met a long time ago by another guy we had here on the show, too.
Juice?
Juice.
Oh, hell, dude, that fool knows everybody, dog. Everybody. We were in Hawaii, they knew that fool.
No, we were in, that's just Hawaii, bro. We were in Hilo. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, man.
Some guy knew him over there because of the glass stuff.
Yeah, some Mariner.
Mariner, yeah. Mariner Rebel. Shout out to Ari, yeah. Hollywood. Ari, Hawaii.
Hawaii, yeah, man.
No, I've known him for a very long time because of the photos. And I got into a fight one time, bro, on Facebook. They took me on Facebook for like 3 days because it's Fat Chola, right? She was posting all of his photos from my book and not tagging nobody.
Right? That's what you do, dog.
Right? Her fat ass, fucking Fat Chola. She was getting likes, bro. People were getting feed on her page. And she was getting more friends, followers than me. Lying over there, profiling. And I told her, listen, you fat bitch. These photos belong to Esteban Oriol. And I sent him the link and everything. Blocked me. And then Facebook took me down for being a harasser. Bro.
Damn.
But then I stopped the fight. But then I realized everybody's doing it. So.
Oh, dude.
Well, now everybody does it all.
They don't even care.
It's beyond.
It was pointless, bro. Yeah. So, yeah. So
at least you stood up for him.
I stood up, bro. Thank you. I hit it with my book. And then I went to me and Juice. We were trying to start like a sketch comedy group. You know, me, here, man.
You were doing skits. You were filming skits,
we were
right?
Filming, yeah. Skits. So we went to go look for a bunch of little that fool knew ever. We went to a bunch of studios, bro.
Is that one time he got you guys a free space?
Yeah, and then we went to meet Mr. Cartoon and Esteban.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
And then they gave me a sweater, bro.
Yeah, you had the Joker brand
sweater. I
still sweater.
Got it, though.
Oh, yeah, the blue one.
The blue one. As an outlay like this,
yeah.
I still got it. But when I met you, I remember you were like the only dude at the only Chicano, right? The only Mexican American in that street, right? Sixth Street you were on?
Yeah, Sixth and Mateo. Now there's they ran everybody out of there. It's all like, you know, hipsters and shit walking around with their little poodles and drinking $10 cappuccinos and vegan wraps and all that shit. But when we moved in there, it was an extension of Skid Row.
Yeah, well, they're buying books on how to roll up a buying books about how to roll up a burrito, rich about another hipster. Like, I want the hipsters know they know what other hipsters like. Like, I would never I would never think about writing like fucking doing a picture a coffee book just on burritos, bro, or showing you how to wrap a burrito, right? Or how to wrap a burrito, huh? And then list his favorite burrito places, which are all on the West Side. And then put it out there. Because he knows these fools are going to buy that shit. And you know, if I would have, write a book about how to roll up tacos, man, nobody will buy that shit. Dog, I know we're going to do that shit.
Dude, what the fuck, dog?
Is this really a book?
Fucking book.
Is this
dude.
Real?
No, I made that up.
Oh,
you're kidding
see, she
me.
Wants to
you
buy
got,
it.
You got really, like, where can
Lisa
I find
it? Lisa wants to buy it already, bro.
Check it out. We're going to have it on the website.
And I read about you that, you started off as a tour manager, right, for Cypress Hill?
Yeah, for House of Pain originally in 92.
Oh, so what was that like?
That was sick because at that time everybody thought they were black guys singing Jump Around. And when we'd come up to the club, it was, you know, three white guys and me. And they're like, what the fuck? Who is these guys coming in here? You know, who the fuck are they? And then we hit the stage and play Jump Around and the crowd would go crazy. And they go, man, I didn't know y'all was white. And, you know, they were going crazy, but... For that little bit of moment that we had the song, they were going nuts.
How could they not know, bro, they were not white, bro? They mentioned only white guys, John McEnroe.
Irish guys.
Those fools
Irish.
Didn't sound like white boys, dude. Everlast was like, you know, just mobbing the stage with the deep-ass voice. Mobbing that shit. I'm knocking on your door, honey, let me in. I remember that album. It was huge, dog.
Yeah.
That was a badass album.
It was, huh?
Yeah. We did like a promo tour at first in a van. It was just me and the three guys, and then and the record label reps, and we'd go around to colleges and college radio shows and do interviews and stuff. And by the end of that summer, we went on a tour with Beastie Boys, And we had 7 minutes on the show with them on the stage, and the song was blowing up, and we got kicked off that tour, and then we were like too rowdy for the Beastie Boys. So we got kicked off that tour, and then...
They're a Christian now.
Yeah.
And
then after that, the song blew up, and we just took off and toured around the world with that first and second album, and then I switched over to Cypress Hill in 94, and my first show with them was Woodstock, 94.
Wow!
Dude, that show was huge. Dude.
Yeah.
I wanted to go, bro.
Oh, fuck. I watched it live, dog.
Oh, yeah, that was the T-shirt.
Dude, Rage, everybody was there, dog.
Yeah, Santana killed it, I heard.
It was off the hook. Henry Rollins played before us. And then Cypress came out and just went, the crowd went crazy for, you know, like a straight hour.
Damn.
Ripping shit out. Like the, I guess it had rained there before and they put plywood all over the floor.
Yeah, it was really muddy that week.
Yeah. And the guy, all the crowd just started taking the wood off and they're holding it up and people were jumping up on the wood and they were like crowd surfing on pieces of plywood. Yeah. So it's pretty, pretty cool show to see, you know.
How did House of Pain know about you?
I was friends with Muggs in around in 1989. I met Muggs and the other guys from Cypress Hill on Cypress Ave, and then hanging out with Muggs all those years until '92. He was like, "Hey, I got a new group coming out that I want you to, you know, tour manage." And all you have to do is make sure that they go to the show on time and do their interviews, and that's pretty much what the job is. And I was like, yeah, sure, because I was only doing construction and working working like the VIP doors at night at clubs. And
what clubs?
Like the trendy ones that were around back then.
Dublin's.
No, it was like the it was a Brent Bullhouse. He'd hire different spots, you know, like on a Friday night, he'd do a club here, you know. So there was no, like, set place. And it was just, like, the different clubs all over the city back then. And I got the, you know, hit up by Muggs to do that job. And I told my other bosses, hey, you guys, you know, what do you think of this? And they're like, go for it, man. You can always come back and work here, you know. You're a good worker, so... I took the chance and never went back. Never fucking hammered another nail or, you know, had to tell somebody they weren't on the guest list again. It was pretty fun, you know. I toured around the world, went to like 44 countries and multiple times and saw a lot of cool shit and did a lot of cool shit. And that's kind of like when I started taking photos, is in the beginning when I was touring with House of Pain. And I was building a lowrider at the same time, and my pops was like, hey, man, you live, you know, pretty cool lifestyle. Like, you're lowriding in East L.A., and then you go, you know, on tour, and you're living like a rock star life. You know, you should document that. And at first, I was kind of, like, shy, you know, to break out a camera. I kind of felt like only, like, paparazzis and tourists had cameras, and it wasn't a good look. And then I busted it out here and there, and got more comfortable with it, and little by little, and you know, now today that's all I do. No, you know, no more touring or that kind of shit.
Oh, the first camera you were using?
The first one I was using was my pops's Minolta 35mm, but then I was able to buy, you know, my own shit. I got a Canon 81 35mm, and I just rolled with that. I still have that to this day.
Your dad was a photographer too, right?
Yeah, Heriberto Orio. He still takes pictures every day downtown. He rolls around. He lives downtown, and he walks through there every day.
Did he take photos for the paper?
No, he just takes them for himself. He's retired.
Your images are so striking. Everything I see, whether it's a man or a woman or a car or whatever it is, like, what is it that makes you decide I want to photograph that, or I have to capture it? What is it that jumps out at you?
Just, you know, different things. You know, you'll just be walking down the street and something will catch your eye and you'll be like, oh, that's cool, or, you know, she's pretty, or he looks cool, or that's a nice car. You know, just different stuff.
Because you don't always take pictures of pretty people. Sometimes it's people who are beat down or homeless. And,
or just
you know,
very mamas.
I love that photo. That is so, yeah.
that was how it was back in the 90s, you know. There's always people in the car, in the car culture, like the lowrider world, and then there was like gangster guys, and then all the girls would come to, you know, check out all the cool gangster guys. So they would come, they leave the baby daddies at home and just put the kids in the stroller on the bus and come and check it out.
It's like your Real Housewives of L.A.
Yeah.
Thing you used to say.
Were you developing your own film too?
No, I tried doing that before I went to school and tried that shit, but it's too much work, it's too hard, and like there's professionals that do it, and I just let them do it, you know?
That was the part that turned me off of anything, bro.
The
developing part. Like, I'm gonna be a photographer, but then I think about being in that dark ass room, and I'm thinking about how much money I'm gonna waste dropping all this stuff, spilling water.
Yeah.
My mom coming in, ¿qué estás haciendo? ¿Te estás jalando dentro?
Okay, chemistry set and shit.
Yeah, open the door and just ruin everything you got exposed.
Where did you grow up at?
I was born in Santa Monica at St. John's, and I grew up around the west side for pretty much all my youth. And then I moved to Hollywood when I was about 18 and stayed out there, and then moved to the downtown area with my partner, Mr. Cartoon. We moved down there around 95, 96 and stayed down there for a long time.
Did you grow up with him, Mr. Cartoon?
No, I met him in 92. We were at a record release party for the Penthouse Players. And one of my friends, Donnie Charles, rest in peace, he took me there. He was a manager at that time of WC in the Mad Circle. And Cartoon had done the artwork for that album cover. And when we went in there, back in those days, if you went to like a hip-hop function, it was like about 90% black people there, and then a couple of Jewish guys and a couple of Mexican guys. And right when we walked in, there was like, you know, the record label guys, you know, were in the corner. You could see them. And we looked over to the left, and there was Cartoon. And he was like, hey, come here. I want you to meet another one of my Mexican homies. So I went over there and just hung out with Cartoon, and we got along good and talked about, you know, different shit that we liked, you know, low riding and music and everything. And I gave him like a House of Pain promo tape, you know, like the single promo cassette tapes. And I go, hey, man, this is this, you know, group I'm going to be working with. Check it out. I'm going to go to Japan. And, you know, when I get back, I'll you know, hit you up. And at that time, he was going to go to Japan, too, and do some murals on some lowriders. And, you know, people would trip out. They're like, oh, man, you know, I didn't know they have lowriders in China, you know. But, you know, he's going to Japan because they were deep in the lowriding thing in the late 80s. They started it. And so, you know, that was one thing that we had in common was, you know, the lowriding thing and then traveling and going to Japan and the hip-hop thing, because he was working on album covers for logos, and he did a thing for Kid Frost back then, and he was doing one for MC Ren. So we were both tied into the music industry and low riding and traveling, so it was cool.
So how long did you tour? What was that like, man? Like when you walk into like when House of Pain or Cypress Hill, and like, I know they're big in Europe, but they're also big in South America, too.
Oh, fuck yeah.
They go crazy over there.
Yeah.
Like Brazil.
Yeah, like Chile and in Caracas and Brazil and all those places. Argentina, they were going nuts. Every time we go out there, it was like a different level, you know, of like...
More pride, huh? Like, yeah.
Yeah, like in Argentina, if they respect you and they like you, they spit at you.
God damn, dog. Yeah.
So we're out there, and
they got the herbs, eh?
The wonder the girl was talking to me like this.
Yeah, yeah. I was shooting one day. Marilyn Manson opened up before us, and I kept feeling like shit hitting me like from behind. You know, I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, I'm looking around on the ground and nothing was like falling, but it felt like little things like were hitting the back of my head and my sweatshirt and shit. And it's like, what the fuck is this? And then I started looking like like I would see like there was a, like a net against where the speakers were, and you'd see like spit coming on the hitting the net. I was like, what the fuck are these motherfuckers are spitting on me? And then I saw him, like, you know, Marilyn Manson, he's a little freaky. He's up there, and he's just wiping it all in him and just, you know,
welcome
rubbing
to
all
the dope show.
Spit. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Pouring wine on himself and, you know, getting into it. And then I went back to the back of the stage, and I told the guys, Be Real and Stand Dog. I was like, hey, man, they do this crazy shit here. They spit on you if they like you and they respect you, and they're like, oh, fuck that. You know,
I'm going to punch somebody.
Nobody spitting on me.
Yeah. They're like, we got to do something about that. Like, what can we do? I go, I don't know. Tell whoever is announcing, you know, back in our country, you know, that's disrespectful, you know, that it's the opposite. And they told me, they're like, we'll try it. You know, we'll try to tell them, but, you know, it's a custom here. So, you know, don't get mad if
how did that get started?
People started fucking spitting loogies on you.
Yeah. Evita started it.
Loogies too?
Yeah, like, you know, they weren't just spitting like little spray shit at you.
Motherfucker were saving them, bro.
Fucking yeah. Oysters, eh?
Yeah, they were saving them, bro.
Esta música es bien graciosa.
And then the first bag goes up, nah.
Yeah, nobody wants to go first.
It sucks. That's funny, eh? Rodrigo comes back to backstage full of fucking loogie. What happened, bro? They came to laugh.
I killed, dog. And do those fools go on stage like that? Or like, what'd you guys
do?
Oh,
we went with an umbrella, bro.
Yeah, we went out there, and you know, of course, some of the people were like, fuck that. You know, this is our country. This is what we do here, you know? But, you know, it's just something that you know, like when you travel, you got to
adapt
to other customs of different, you know, cultures. So that was one of them.
Damn, bro. Next thing you spit up a cop, bro, just tell him you're Argentina. I was like, man, your badge.
How was Mexico City when you guys went over there?
The first time
they shit out of us, bro.
The first time we went there, it was for a video. It was for How I Could Kill a Man in Spanish.
That's the one you directed.
I love that one.
And I directed it, and that was pretty much the first time Cypress had ever went to Mexico at all. So when we got there, I was like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? You know, we haven't heard of no show or nothing. They said we came to film a video. And we met a lot of people in the bars real quick, and before you know it, they're like, okay, you know, do you need anybody? We're like, yeah, hell yeah, we need as many people as we can get. So within like 2 days, we had just had a couple hundred people ready to, you know, roll around with us in the video. Lowriders, lowrider bikes, you know, dogs.
Yeah, dude, I seen that shit. Because that was all like in the Zocalo and shit. And then you had a crazy scene where you had the militaries like come up and then they went in reverse.
Yeah.
It was like, it was fucking badass, dude.
Yeah, that's when they come out to lower the flag and take the flag off and take it back inside right there. And I filmed all that with a Bolex 16mm camera, so it was like, you know, all, you know, real old school film, and that was before the whole digital thing. So it was a trip, you know.
How did you jump from photographer to director?
A friend of mine, he just passed away. His name was Martin. He was a guy from London, and he was doing like a documentary on our car club. And he was like, hey, he had this 8mm camera, and he had a digital, like, mini DV camera. And he was like, hey, you know, try and shoot this. And he handed me the 8mm camera, and it was, you know, make your images come to life. And I was like, well, okay, I'll try it. So I'd go do photo shoots, and then I'd grab that camera and shoot a little bit of it here and there. And when I developed the footage, that's when I assembled like a little tape of my footage, and I gave it to the record labels, and they were like, hey, you know, we'll, because when you go to try to get a job doing directing for music videos, they go, okay, cool, this is the first video you want to do, can you show us, you know, what other music videos you've done so that we could see your work? And you're like, well, this is the first one, so of course I don't have any, you know, from before, you know, this is it. So I had to make a little tape of footage that I've shot and show them and put the song to it, and then they're like, okay, go for it, you know? But it's kind of hard to get into that. It was back then, it was really hard to get into that industry. Even getting into movies, they're like, oh, you've done 200 music videos and 100 commercials. Well, you know, you want to direct a movie? Yeah. You know, I'd love to. Well, can you show us what other movies you've done? I'm like, no, I want to get into it, you know. I've just done music videos and commercials and shit like that. And they're like, well, we want to see what movies you've done, you know, if you want to get into movies.
I want to say, well, let me just throw all them together. Yeah. Let me show my 90-minute video.
Yeah. Yes, they make it hard for you, you know, but, well, now it's a different game, you know. You could go to Best Buy and buy a camera and make your own movie and do it like that. But back then, it was a lot harder.
Another people with two podcasts, bro.
Because back when you're saying, like, it wasn't digital, it's all analog, so you were actually cutting, right?
Yeah.
Damn.
You cut it on a Steinbeck machine and all that stuff? Like, old school?
Yeah, they had, like, a reel-to-reel.
Yeah,
and you cut out.
A little razor blade. Wow. Good shoot.
Yeah.
That's cool to know the videos were even made that way back then. I never thought about videos being made like
that. Is that a Mr. Cartoon phone cover?
No, this is my friend Dopey. He does a lot of tattoos. And I was just showing him, you know, a different way he could make some money. And, you know, like I say, you can make a couple little products, you know, T-shirts, phone covers, whatever. And
charge $200 for them.
Yeah, you know.
It's badass.
Cool. What's up, fool?
Chilling, dog. How you living?
Good, man. The last time I went to your office, well, I walked in there. It was during the art walk when you were still on 6th Street.
Uh-huh.
And
you had that little gallery for a while.
You had the gallery, and that's when I bought my T-shirt.
And the bicycles in the front.
I bought a badass hoodie from you. My son took it, though.
The one with the photos, photos,
it was a hoodie with all your photos.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not just these. And the guy with the bubble eye, which I like. The big guy with the bumpy eyes. Yeah. And
had Emilio, too.
I had one of a kid crying. Emilio.
I don't know if Emilio was on that one. But he shot that photo. Remember?
Yeah, That's one of my favorite photos.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that.
And but that particular time when you were doing that movie, when we were dealing with Pacino and De Niro...
Righteous Kill.
Righteous Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the posters for the movie. I think they had like a party there, right?
Yep. Yeah. We had like two pop up shops there. We had like four stores there. Us and a couple of our friends, and we had two pop up shops there. And one of them we would do events for, and we did an event for Righteous Kill there because we had done we did a spec job for the poster. And they're like, you can try to do the poster, but, you know, we already hired somebody to do it. But if we like yours and use it, we could pay you, you know. So we're like, well, fuck it. You know, if we don't get paid, at least we got to shoot, you know, Robert De Niro and all that shit. So we ended up, you know, trying our best, and we ended up getting the job. And they liked it, and they paid us. And they're like, hey, you know, what else would you guys want to do? And we said, let's do like a little pop-up thing for the movie, and we did that, and it came out good. So that was just a couple little things we did with them.
How many apple boxes did Pacino stand on?
Yeah.
The little guy?
He has shoes that have the apple boxes built in them.
How tall is he?
I don't know. I'd say
5 feet about, five? No, 5 feet 10?
Maybe smaller. Yeah.
5'3" or something. I met him in New York. He's like this.
Yeah.
Pleasure to meet you, Lisa.
Yeah.
He was so nice, though. This was before phone cameras, but he was going to take a photo with my family who was visiting me in New York. And they ran out of battery.
There they go.
And then we had another opportunity. He ran down the street to catch up with us because I said, no, I could take it. And then realized that the memory on the digital camera was full, and I just said, forget it.
He said, hoo-ha!
I know. He said, yeah. Well, I tried.
That's cool, though, man.
He's very nice, yeah.
There you go, the broken short. Phone.
It was broken before camera. Phone. Yeah, it was a digital camera. Anyway.
How tall was he? Was he short?
Yeah. He's pretty short.
They were cool, didn't you know?
Yeah, they were super cool. Like,
tight.
I knew De Niro's stepdaughter. From New York, Drea, and then I met Pacino at a birthday party in Hollywood at the Mint Club, I think it was, for Well, I was going to do these photos of him back then. So I just kind of broke the ice. I told him, hey, I met you at this party. And I told De Niro, I know you're a stepdaughter. And that kind of broke the ice to where they were cool right off the bat. You know, so it wasn't just like, you know, a guy that doesn't know anybody, you know, meeting them. And it kind of helps when you have something to talk about. Other than,
hell yeah.
You know, like, hey, stand right here so I can take a cool picture of you, you know.
That's what's up, man. That's badass.
But I was, in my head, I was thinking, like, shooting those two guys was like a goal of mine, you know. I used to tell my wife, if I ever shot, like, after I shot Dennis Hopper, I told my wife, if I ever shot Al Pacino or Robert De Niro, I could quit and I'd be cool, you know. I'd go work
done.
At Home Depot or whatever and fuck it. But I ended up shooting both of them, and obviously I didn't quit. Yeah, there she is.
That's your wife right there with a shotgun?
Yeah, yeah. That's why I have to get home on time. That's why I come home and make the dinner. I do the laundry. So I don't get cracked upside my head with the barrel of that.
She don't play, man.
Somebody asked a question here. One of the people watching said, "Do you feel that hipsters and the new artsy people are exploiting the life in the barrios just to make money?"
Yeah, you know, they like it. You know what? It's kind of hard to you know, like, you can't control that shit, you know? Like, there was a, you know, people would be like, oh, yeah, these fuckers are getting Chicano tattoos on them, and they're not from the hood or whatever. And you got to, you know, somebody told me, you know, well, American people go and tattoo dragons and koi fish on them, and they
Chinese
never...
Chinese letters.
Yeah, they never been to China, or they don't go to Japan, or, you know, they're not over there doing shit, you know, so everybody just, well, I guess they see different cultures and they like it, and they don't live it, but they can get that part of it, you know, without having to go through any of the drama, you know.
Right. Back then, those tattoos, you only got them in prison and shit, right?
Yeah, you had to, like, you know.
Know someone.
Know someone, or you had to earn them or something like that. But
like spider web, bro. When I see a spider web on an elbow, I know they did time.
Yeah, that was like, you know, there was like
peacock.
Certain things that, yeah, like peacocks. You don't see that no more. Like,
no, man.
My friend Dopey, I was telling about, he, I go, hey, man, nobody asked for like peacock tattoos. I go, no, I haven't even, nobody's ever brought that up, you know? It's just like, that's kind of one of those things that.
Oh, the old school, bro. Peacocks, spider web on the elbow. What's another one, man? The Virgin Mary, of course.
Yeah.
That used to be a good one. Jesus Christ in the back with a cross.
Yeah, anything that you know.
But then before that, I was like, hey, man, nobody's getting a sailor girl no more.
A little anchor?
Who the last time somebody wanted a shark? who the last time he has the anchors right here, brother? Popeye.
Yeah.
Now everybody wants real shit. Now people want their head to look like it's bruised up now.
Yeah,
I see shit like
love
that.
Me up, dog.
People want hickeys tattooed on them now.
Oh. Let me call my sister. My sister gave us a hickey to a white boy one time. That hickey lasts a year. All right. At least they gave me the cue for another commercial.
I didn't give you the cue. No, right. You can wait.
There you go.
You can wait for another 15 minutes.
Okay, everybody. You guys ever thought about hiring somebody, man? But you don't want to, you're tired of hiring your cousin or your sister's, your father-in-law's son or your
flakes.
Family member's broke their flake. They tell you, they don't even call you at work. They call you at your mom's house. Hey, did he leave to work already? Tell him I'm not going to come. You know, so man, you know, especially Mondo, right? How many times, bro, Mondo fire people, bro, for a bad exterminating job, bro? Like, Pops falling off the ladder. Hey, bro. Can Pops get a ladder?
No, dog.
Damn, that fool can't be a new ninja, huh?
That fool can't get on a ladder, dog.
Can that motherfucker hold a lasso and go, she got me, she loved me, she done a ladder. What's up, fool? All right, man. With ZipRecruiter, is different, man.
Let me cut this.
It learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply for a job. In fact, 80% of employers who holds post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. Never! Business of all sizes, trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/foo. That's ZipRecruiter.com/foo. ZipRecruiter.com/foo. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. You never know, bro. That Mega Man guy might need an extra guy to draw.
Yeah, Mario.
Mario 10.
Mario listening to Esteban getting motivated, bro.
And it's a trip, though, because now a lot of dudes are doing, like, photos, like, lowrider shows on black and white and, like, you know, gangsters on the street and stuff. But, I mean.
Not good.
It's kind of like you're like people trying to do what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you did.
Yeah. There was people that did it before me, and there's a lot of people doing it after me. But I just think I brought my own twist to it, you know, and I think that I don't know. I feel like I work harder than a lot of people that are doing what I do, you know. Like I'm out there. I get up, you know, early as hell, go to sleep late, you know, like, you know how they say hard work pays off, you know? So for me, I just, as soon as I wake up, I'm on the move, you know? And other people, they'll do the same type of photography, but they'll sit at home waiting for somebody to come and kick their door down with a suitcase full of money and be like, here, you know? You don't have to do shit. You did the photos. That's all you got to do. You know, it's like, but it's not like that.
There's a lot of stuff that's going on in the background.
Yeah, like 90% of my work is what I'm doing when I'm not doing the photo shoots. You know, that's just like that's the easiest part. Is that one day you're doing the photo shoot. The hardest part is you know up until that point and after that. You know, like you know what do you do after you. For me, what do I do after I shot Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, which was like my biggest goal in what I do? And it was like, okay, well, cool, you did that. Now what, you know? You got to keep going, you know, or really quit. And I've just been going nonstop, you know. This year I'm working on, I've put out 2 books on my own, and this year my goal is to put out 3 books at the end of the year, so. That's what I'm working towards now. And I got a bunch of my, I have like 82 photos up at the new Hotel Figueroa.
Yeah, we just stayed
we
there.
Just, we stood there. We saw them.
Yeah. So oh, yeah.
We knew they were yours right away.
We knew they were yours right away.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be the first resident artist there where they give you a room for 3 months to do whatever you want in there. And it's most of the time it's like a painter or writer.
Oh, that's cool.
So that is cool.
This is the first time it's going to be a photographer, and my goal is to do a book a month while I'm in there.
That's badass.
And,
that's
you really know, cool. Go in there and scan all the photos and pick everything and lay it out, and then it'll be done and give it to the publishers, and they can go from there. And
so you just have that dedicated, focused time to, like, be in that room and work. That's cool. So the thing I think that's different from your stuff versus, like, these people who you could tell are copying your style or subject matter. The thing is, like, all your photos, they don't have any judgment. That's what I like about them. Like, you might photograph a crack addict smoking, you know, hitting a pipe. You might, but you don't feel like you're judging them.
It doesn't feel like you're driving by and going, look at that loser.
Yeah, looking down on them at all. It's
like you took away all the ugliness of that person.
It's pure.
And you made it look like a human being again.
Yeah, that's from being down there all those years, you know? Like, I've had family members, and I have family members that are homeless and live like that. And it's hard to judge somebody that you've seen, somebody that you love and your own family members living like that, you know? It's, like, hard to... You know, I'm around people and I hear them say shit like that all the time. Or, like, look at them fuckers. You know, look how they fucking live. They're like fucking rats living in the street. And, you know, they just say a lot of shit. But when you've had family members living like that, you're like, you know, I just keep it to myself. I don't want to get into argument, you know.
Right.
But it's kind of like, you know, just makes you think, like, fuck, I hope. Like, instead of being like, man, fuck you, motherfucker, you're talking about somebody, you know, I keep it personal and to myself, that which family members that I have lived like that, you know, I keep that to myself. But the first thing you want to say is, man, go fuck yourself. You know, you're talking about my family member, you know, they live like that. But then you, it just makes you be humble and think about it. And like, you're like, man, I wonder how that family member is doing, you know. I want to go by and see them, you know, just like it always like brings a brings it like right in your face. Whereas that's what I think about instead of being like, you know, hey, you know, like
judgmental. Yeah, dickhead.
Like, or just like, you know, sticking up for them or whatever. I'd rather just put more time into it, you know, go help more people or go see how my family members are that are, you know, because, you know. Like, right now is probably the most I've ever seen homeless people in L.A. Yeah. There's this, like, crazy community of people that live in RVs or motorhomes that park, like, 20 or 30 of them on a block, and they have, like, their own little community. And then there's all the people in the tents, you know, that it's crazy. I've never seen it like how it is right now. And
yeah, there are whole cities down there now.
It's yeah. Like, and we're like in one of the richest cities in the world, and we have the worst homeless problem in the yeah. world, you know?
Yeah, man, that's fucking
it don't make
nuts.
No sense, you know?
Hell no.
And I seen Tupac, he said on an interview like 20 years ago, he's like, man, I don't know how motherfuckers live in a mansion and they drive out their driveway and there's homeless people at the, you know, on their street. Like, how does that work, you know? And you think about it, like all the people that have all this money, like, but then the people that are homeless, like most of them don't want help. You know, like we have family members that will tell us, hey, we know where you live. When we want help or we want to change, we'll come and knock on the door. And that's like fucked up. You know, you're like, man, you'd rather sit there and struggle and not know where you're going to get your next food from or be cold at night and than just to, you know, come and get some help from your family. You know, it's kind of a trippy thing, you know. But that's where the mental illness kicks in. And you don't know, you know.
How yeah, to, man.
You're not trained to help those kind of people, you know.
Some of them are crazy, man. Like, some of them haven't had their meds in forever.
Or they never liked taking their meds, which is why
yeah, they were dropped off. And, yeah. Or they were dropped off from Orange County, too.
But that, and that's funny because with, you know, every government and all that, that's something that they just, like, overstep. They don't even look at that.
Yeah,
humanitarian aspect.
If you go to San Julian and 6th Street,
damn, that's my spot.
Yeah, that's
the next block over is like the biggest cop station in
yeah.
LA.
Yeah, they're right across the street from
like,
them.
They come out of their door and they see that shit all day every day. And you know what are they gonna do? Bust all those guys for a $2 rock, you know, or $5 bag of heroin?
Right.
And then like those guys go to prison, and you know, like. How do you help that shit?
Like the war on drugs is lost right across the street.
Yeah,
right out the front door.
There was a time like maybe like 8 years ago, or maybe even longer before that, that they were thinking about making a movie, UN cartoon.
Yeah,
and what happened to that?
Nothing.
They didn't want to give the money, huh?
Sounds like Hollywood.
Yeah. What juice them, bro? They didn't want to give. They wanted
nothing.
Yeah, it got put on the shelf.
Yeah, but did anybody write it?
Yeah, they had a writer.
You wrote it, no?
No.
Did you want to direct?
Yeah, I wanted to direct, and then we had the writer, and he was there for like 7 years. He wrote a new script every year, and he got paid on that real good, and they said, nah, you know, we're not interested. But they came back, and they said, we want to do another movie based on like low writing. We want to add more low writing into it, and they did Low Riders, and me and Cartoon were hired to do executive produce and consulting on it. And that's a movie that came out last year.
With Ava Longoria.
Ava Longoria, Damien Bashir. And, you know, that one came out and did a little bit in the movie theaters. But I don't know, you know, what I don't know how that whole business works.
No, I remember, I never saw that movie, though, but I remember, now, the more you talk about the Lowrider movie you're talking about, I remember when I was a kid, I think I saw a Lowrider movie where the Lowrider guy loves the white chick, too. Eh?
Yeah, probably.
Back in the days, bro.
Yeah,
and he had to cross a line and get jumped. I don't remember that movie, but yeah, I think maybe Bash told me about that movie.
Yeah, the one that was, you know, closest to it was Boulevard Nights.
Boulevard Nights was badass, though.
Yeah, that was like the closest you can get to the movie that we did last year.
But Boulevard Nights.
We just tried to make it look, you know, the best that it could look visually, you know, bringing the right cars, put in the right, you know, situations, you know, trying to consult them like, you know, this wouldn't happen or this isn't real. And, you know, but, you know, Hollywood does the things their way and you can't, you know, intervene, you know. It's their money, it's their idea, they're hiring you. You're just like hired help kind of. You don't make no decisions.
We're going to make the lead. An ex-NASCAR driver who wants to race in the streets now.
So to this day, you haven't directed a film then?
No.
Really?
No, I'm working on it though. I'm still working on it. But, you know, like I said, it's hard. They always want to, they say, you know, show us your work, what you've done, you know. Show us a short movie or something like that. Like, they don't think that you doing a music video or you directing a documentary or anything is enough of a resume to do a movie.
But what's his face got? Three movies, I think. He did the Charlie's Angels film was his first one. Mick G, he was a video director.
He was huge.
Yeah, Charlie's Angels was the first real movie that he had done. And then he got like three or four movies after that.
And Reza, too.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know how good they are as movies, but they were popular enough for him to get more. He did Reza, what'd you say?
Reza did that movie. Dope, right? His first movie with Master P.
Dope was his?
I think it was.
God, I love that movie.
You like Dope?
I love Dope.
I like Dope.
Dope's the one that was most, you know, that connected to me most about our other idea.
Yeah. No, not that Dope.
No,
not that Dope. Master P. No, not Master P. DMX did a movie with a drug dealer.
Oh,
it's called Dope.
Oh, okay.
And I think RZA redirected that. It's kind of, that movie was kind of like Al Capone meets a lot of other movies. Because you remember when that Pulp Fiction came out, how many movies came out that were similar to Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs? Like a genre, right?
Yeah, man.
That movie was called Walk Proud. That was Robbie Benson.
Robbie Benson. Walk Proud.
He wasn't Native American in that movie?
No, he was Native. Chicano.
That's, the one way he plays a Native is he's a runner, right? Okay.
So what you working on now?
Just those three books and the documentary with me and Cartoon. And then I got a couple little movie ideas that I'm trying to push the line on. But, you know, I learned my lesson not to talk about them because fucking 10 years later they don't come out. You look like an idiot.
Yeah. I know, man. I 7 years ago I did a movie that I didn't want to talk about. Now it's coming out. I definitely don't want to talk about it.
But it's called Taco Shop.
It's called Taco Shop. Comes out May 4th. Go look for it, man. I have no lines.
You have a few, but it's you know, it's going to be one of those.
And one of the cult movies, classics, man. Where, what happened, brother? Did you cut your scene? No, they cut my parts.
Yeah, you need somebody who's got ideas who can say, "Hey, I want this guy."
Yeah, or you just know. An investor who's not, you know, who's just like, "Hey, I believe in you. Here's some money. Go do your thing." You know, I'm not going to fuck with you and break your balls and. I just want you to, you know, do your best.
Someone that's going to bring in their niece in the middle of the movie and go, put her in.
Yeah.
That happens a lot, huh? Write her a part, homie.
Give her some lines.
So you were on that show with Anthony Bourdain?
Yeah, a couple times. Once with David Cho.
David Cho.
And then next time with me and Cartoon.
Where'd you guys eat at?
It was a shop that got closed down. It was called La Reina on 7th and Mateo. There was this elderly woman there that used to bring a cart out at nighttime, and she used to make bomb food. And then something happened between her and the youngsters that worked with her, and she ended up quitting, and then we just didn't go back there no more. And then they closed down that place, and it's going to be like a – it's right next to the ice cream museum.
Oh.
I think it might be a cotton candy museum now or something. Who knows?
I used to work down there. My first job was right there on 6. When you go down the bridge, on 6th Street. The 5th Street Bridge. The 5th Street Bridge, right?
There's 4th, 6th, and 7th.
7th Street Bridge.
Yeah.
As soon as you go over the bridge, I don't know the name of that street.
Yeah.
But I used to...
Santa Fe.
My first job was right to the right. I used to work at Apex, bro. Loading produce from 11 o'clock at night to noon. No break.
Yeah. We used to live right there, me and Cartoon, across the street from Leach's. Is it a death threat?
No.
He said the movie I'm talking about was Duke of Earl.
That's right, it was Duke of Earl.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
That movie was badass, man. They play that shit in the project behind the wall.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in Pico Aliso. Pico Gardens. But then my baby mama lived in Pico Aliso. Then we both lived in Pico Aliso. You grew up in a bad neighborhood where there was a lot of shootings?
No, not really. Now even the neighborhood we live in now, there's like a helicopter over us every week. You know, it sounds like it's gonna land in my backyard, but there's always some shit going on. The SWAT team's running through our yard about 2 times already, full. You know,
damn,
with the AR-15s out and the dogs and all that. And we're like, man, are we getting raided? But they're like, oh no, we're looking for somebody that drove a stolen car and they ran in through your yard. And at first I was like, yeah, right. You know, you guys just want to see what I do, you know? But I guess now shit's just buck wild everywhere. It feels like, you know?
Pretty much.
Are your kids involved in photography also?
No. None of them, I tell my kids all the time, like, hey, can you turn your phone like straight at least, or you know, can you do something like you're a photographer's daughter, you know?
Said block.
Yeah.
Like,
she said block. Yeah, yeah. Okay, Dad, you won't be
hater. You're a hater.
But I send them, you know, private messages so I don't put them on blast on their pages, you know, like, hey, can you do this a little better? Like, I have one daughter likes to work out. I was like, hey, can you turn the camera this way so all my friends aren't, you know, looking, like, you know, at that angle at you? Yeah. I'm like, okay, sorry, Dad. You know? But, you know... You always hope the best for your kids, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
Me and my wife always told our kids the same, all four of them, you know, get good grades in school, work hard, you know, don't do drugs, don't have unprotected sex, and, you know, that didn't work out. You know? So they all just do whatever the fuck they want to do. And
that's what happens. They're human. They can't, you can only control them for
you
so long.
Sound like my dad.
Yeah.
Just do what you gotta do.
Yeah. Somebody said, "What's up with Joker Brand?"
I still make a little bit, you know, here and there. Joker Brand. It's on my website. It's just little pieces here and there, and then we sell some of it. I have a distributor in Germany, and he covers the European part of it. But
they don't own the company; they just
distribute. They just distribute for us. It's like a licensing thing. But they do real nice shit over there. They do it the right way over there, you know?
Do you have to get your trademark and everything done in Germany as well?
Yeah. If you want anything trademarked, like, there's guys in Guadalajara that just bootleg the fuck out of us.
China does it too. You have to get specific lawyers and, yeah.
They have, like, videos and guys rapping in the videos and they're singing about Joker and everything. And then I wrote on there, hey, like, don't support the fake, you know, bootleg Joker brand company. And they're like, fuck you, motherfucker. You know, we are Joker. Joker is our shit. I go, well, my boy drew that shit in 1995, you know. Who did you have draw, you know? They're like, we don't give a fuck. Fuck your shit, you know. I'm like, all right, cool.
They're dancing full of spit on themselves.
Yeah.
Fucking dickheads, man.
Who just take, huh?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
When I first won Last Comic Standing, someone bought FelipeEsparza.com.
Oh, yeah.
A fan wanted
to sign it to me for 5 G's.
Yeah.
A fan.
Yeah. I got a guy on that has a Joker Brand Instagram. It won't let me get it.
Are you serious?
Do you own Joker Brand as a brand? Like a copyright? You can fight that then.
I own the trademark and everything.
Yeah. You can send a cease and desist letter to the the registrar of that website, yeah, and they'll give it to you. That's what I did with Felipe Esparza. But it took a few years, but I got it.
Yeah, and it's like you got to be on that.
You just
got
to be on it. It's so annoying.
Along with every other fucking thing you have to do, you know. It's like, after here, I'm going to go to my warehouse, and then I got to go downtown and buy some blank shirts and take them to Santa Fe Springs to the printer and bring them back here to the printer. It's like, oh, yeah, and then I got to send that paperwork. And, you know, it's like,
I know.
Fuck,
that's
man.
My day. That's every
it's
day.
Never ending.
I just don't understand how somebody can say they're a fan of somebody and then they jack your shit or they try to.
Oh, I know. Fuck. Can you imagine, like, buying a website and then asking for money for I see you've blown up. Like I see you want. Yeah. Yeah, it's extortion. It is.
Dude.
Wow. How about all those people that want free photos, too, though? Like they don't even understand how much time it takes to fill up lights.
Well, they think they can steal that shit just on Instagram, which people do. But that's great. You make a book and you publish them yourself, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good coffee book, man. I love
but
this
like,
book.
You know thank how many you. Photos he goes through? I mean, how many do on average do you go through for one great photo that you grab out of there?
I have
there's
about,
hundreds taken.
Yeah,
right?
I have about between 400 and 500,000 photos that I've taken in my whole career. So when they go, hey, you know, we want a book to put out.
It's hard to choose the best ones. That's like
Kim Kardashian before she was famous.
Yeah, she probably hates that because it, you know,
it's not.
It's like a it's not autograph her now, you know. It's so not how she looks now.
It's an old Kim.
Little boobs on that one, huh?
The first butt.
The first butt.
Yeah, butt number one.
All right, let's wrap it up a little.
Let me see if I have my little silver pen over here.
And a quick question in regards to House of Pain getting kicked off that tour with Beastie Boys. Was it like one incident or they're just too rowdy and like for those fools?
It was the tour manager.
For the Beastie Boys?
For the Beastie Boys. He gave Everlast Mom tickets like in the grass.
Damn.
At the top of the amphitheater. And she called and she was like, hey, honey, you know, I'm in the show. And he's like, where are you? And she goes, oh, well, I'm up here on the grass. You know, if you look up at the top of the thing there, you know, where the lights shine in on the guys at the stage, that's where I'm at. And he blew his lid. You know, he's like, what the fuck? You know, motherfuckers give my mom the fucking, you
lawn
know.
Lawn seats and shit.
Yeah, the lawn seats, the fucking. And, you know, he went in and told the guy a piece of his mind. And the next day we were off the tour.
Damn.
You know, but it's like, you know, before they were, you know, punk rockers and, you know, hip hop and shit.
Right.
You think, like, nobody would be, like, that sensitive, you know?
Yeah, fight for your right to party and shit.
Yeah, like, you know, fight for the right for your mom to see your fucking concert, you know?
Hell what yeah.
I mean? It's like, that's, I didn't think he was asking too much, you know?
Right.
And yeah, he had the right to be a little upset. Like, your mom's going to go to, like, that was probably one of the first shows that she was going to see. Especially with a full fucking crowd, you know? So he wasn't asking too much, you know? And for that guy to, you know, be a power trip and be like, oh, you're going to come to my office and be disrespectful, I'll have your ass thrown off the tour, you know? Like, that's some baby shit, you know?
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
But fuck it. It didn't hurt him. He's, you know, he blew up.
And that spot was 7 minutes opening?
Yeah, it was a...
Seven?
It was like an intro for like a couple minutes and then jump around.
Damn.
Damn.
It was like one and a half songs.
Wow.
And it took off, you know?
Nothing to blow up, huh?
That was what? To check your head tour or is that already ill communication? Ill communication?
Yeah, I think it was ill communication.
Sabotage days?
Yeah. I saw the Beastie Boys for the first time with Madonna in 19... I think it was 84 in San Diego.
Oh, and you seen that? Is that the Like a Virgin tour or is that the tour after?
I think that was Like a Virgin.
Because they had that big Budweiser blow up?
That's License to Ill License tour. To that Ill? Was their License okay. to Ill tour. I
this
saw
is back
one.
When they were doing punk rock
this
shit.
This is before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is before they started touring as their own thing.
So that's okay. That's before they even were fucking rapping.
Yeah,
pre-Cookie Puss and all that shit. It's like when the, what's?
Where L7... L7.
She was a drummer, right?
Kate? From Luscious Jackson and L7, I think. But she was in their band, too. I can't remember what they were called.
They're called the new. They were called Quasar, right? But then they were Beastie Boys before because they were doing the hardcore stuff for a while, like, you know, just as of late, you know, before Homeboy passed. So that you seen them back then in that tour?
Yeah.
The Young Aborigines.
I think it was in Balboa Park. Damn, in San Diego. It was like some amphitheater that was there. Madonna was playing, and they opened up for her.
How was Madonna?
She was, you know, that was in her prime.
Back then, shit. Yeah.
Yep. Damn. That would
have been awesome to see you, dude.
What's up, fool? What's up, Rodrigo Torres?
Nothing, dude. Chilling, man.
You're with a yeah, man, bro.
Yeah, man.
All right. What's up, fool? Your show's coming up on April 19th at where?
Ontario Improv.
Ontario Improv, okay.
With Edwin San Juan.
You say you have a show coming up? Dishes, right?
No, I have to put all the new dates on your website. That's right. I have to order new merch. I have to finish reconciling the first quarter so I can pay your sales tax for the first quarter. Damn. I have. You want me to list everything?
No.
Or just the dishes?
You're going to give Esteban a headache because he probably got to do the same thing.
Yeah.
I need an assistant.
Shout out to Esteban Oriol, bro. Oriol.
Thank you, bro.
Chilling here with us.
Yeah, thank
having
you for
a good time,
me.
Man.
Likewise, man.
Can people still buy that book, the one I have in my hand?
Yeah, they can get it from my publisher in Italy.
Okay. How about the old? Do you still have your store, the Mr. Cartoon, in your store with the hoodies?
No, that was this pop up shop we did in downtown for 2 years.
That was for the okay for the fucking.
They raised our rent like 3 times, and we were like, "See ya," you know. And that was after like some of the homeless people would come. One of the guys one time he calls up and he goes, "Hey, there's a lady shitting in front of the store." I go, "What do you mean?" Because like the door cut in the doorway. She had backed her ass up to the door, shit on it, and wiped her ass and threw her paper through the mail slot on the door. And I was like, "What am I doing?" I go, "Clean that shit up. We have customers coming, bro."
That's a standing ovation in El Salvador.
Yeah. I was like, "What am I gonna do? Clean that shit up." Yeah.
Clean it up. We got customers coming.
Cerote, te aplaudo.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What's up, fool? Where can they find you on your Instagram?
Yeah, it's just my name, Esteban Oriol. I want to make
I'm
it
glad
simple
you still
for
have that.
Yeah. And then I got Esteban Oriol Shop and the LA Woman Book are all the accounts that I work with on Instagram.
Nothing with Joker.
Facebook.
Nothing with Joker brand or what?
No, I got a Joker brand Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I just use that on Twitter, you know, because just try to keep shit alive, you know.
Yeah.
What's up, fool? Thank you for having us.
Or thank you for coming on the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, continued success and keep shining. Thank you very much.
Wenn du keine Werbung hören willst, hör weg. Wenn du alle Regler aufdrehen willst, dreh sie auf. Wenn du tanzen willst, tanze. Start Moving, der Seat Ibiza. Schon ab 199 Euro monatlich. Mit Seat Drive Easy. Ein Preis, alles drin. Inklusive Monatsrate, Vollkasko, 4 Jahre Inspektion und Verschleiß sowie 4 Jahre Garantie.